been talking about how we are, as Christians, called to freedom. It comes from some statements that the Apostle Paul makes in the book of Galatians. And really, the book of Galatians will serve as kind of our anchor for this year as we explore this idea of being called to freedom. This morning, we're going to think about some things that the apostle suggests to us in Galatians, the fifth chapter. And we're going to look specifically at verse 6, and then we'll drop down and we'll read verses 13 and 14. In Galatians 5 at verse 6, Paul says, "In Christ Jesus, neither circumcision availeth anything nor uncircumcision, but what really matters is faith that works through love." Then in verse 13, he expands that a little bit. He says, "You, brethren, were called for freedom. Only use not your freedom for an occasion to the flesh, but through love be servants one to another. For the whole law is fulfilled in one word, even this, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself." So we're gonna talk a little bit for this month about being motivated by love, about acting through love or acting from love. And you know, this was a unique thing as far as the Romans were concerned. This was not something that was a part of Roman civilization. We take it for granted that everybody understands that love is the expression of the divine personality that corresponds to divine behavior. God loved us. And when we think about God, we think about the fact that he is not described as loving. That's not broad enough. God really is love. And I say that because this was a hard concept for them to grasp during the Roman Empire. They were used to serving gods like Jupiter, who's up here, a relief carving of Jupiter. But they served Jupiter mostly out of fear. Their relationship with gods was one that was based on vengeance. Their notion of being able to serve God came from the cult religions. And we've talked a little bit about those cult religions before. But remember, those cult religions just said, "I am God, and if you don't appease me, then I will cause evil things to happen to you." They would never turn their face heavenward in their periods of worship. They always fixed their gaze on the floor because their God was not something that they could approach. So Christianity, if you think about it, is really the only religious expression that treats deity as love, that even conceptualizes a loving relationship with deity. Now, we take it for granted that that's the way everybody ought to look at God. And we do that probably because we're so familiar with a passage like John 3 and verse 16. I understand this is the most widely quoted statement in the entire world. "God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have eternal life." That's a truly shattering kind of expression. It's hard for us to understand and to grasp what it would mean for this to be true, especially if we came from a religion like the cult religions that were practiced in the Roman Empire. In 1 John, the third chapter, at verse 1, a lot of what we'll be talking about this month comes from the book of John. John is the disciple who wrote most of his letters around the concept of love. But John says, behold, what manner of love the Father has bestowed upon us, that we should be called children of God. Such we are. For this cause, the world knows us not because it knew him not. Well, they didn't know God, so they wouldn't be able to comprehend God's children. But as I said, this concept that God is a loving God who cares for his creation as children is a foreign notion to them. 1 John, the third chapter, in Galatians, the second chapter, you see the same thing expressed about Jesus. And of course, we know that Jesus is God, laid aside those things that were a part of being God and took on himself the form of a servant. I was listening to Dan May in a Bible discussion, and he was talking about how of all creation, only Jesus decided he was going to be born. Think about that. That's an amazing statement. We are familiar with the notion that you don't get to choose your parents, and you don't get to choose your sisters and your brothers and your family, because you're just born into it. Jesus is the only being who has ever existed throughout time who chose to be born. That's an amazing, amazing statement. Galatians, the second chapter at verse 20, the apostle says, I've been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I that live, but Christ lives in me. And the life that I now live in the flesh, I live in faith. The faith which is in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself up for me. We always think about how Jesus gave himself on the cross. Jesus gave himself by being born. And then ultimately it issued in Jesus dying on the cross. 1 John, the third chapter at verse 15. Paul, or John, kind of takes this notion that God is love, and he says, whoever hates his brother is a murderer. And you know that a murderer has no life in him. It's just inconceivable that love would not characterize us if we are children of God. And we act out of love for God. C.S. Lewis made a statement that is so striking in its clarity that it's one of those statements that I wish I'd said. I didn't. It's not a Bible statement, but this is what C.S. Lewis says. They would say, he answered, that you do not fail in obedience through lack of love, but you lost love because you never attempted it. Isn't that an amazing statement? We think about keeping commandments, and we should think about keeping commandments. In John 14 at verse 15, Jesus makes this statement, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. So the commandments that Jesus gave to his apostles, of course, we respond to what Jesus commanded. We respond, and it's prompted by the love that we have for Jesus. The Father gave us commandments. 1 John, the second chapter, and at verse 3, I think I have a misprint up here. He says, "Hereby we know that we know him if we keep his commandments." Now that's a reference not to Jesus, but is a reference to God instead. In 2 John, and the 2 John only has one chapter, so it's 2 John, verse 3 beginning, John says, "Grace, mercy, and peace shall be with us from God the Father and from Jesus Christ, the Son of the Father, in truth and love. I rejoice greatly that I found certain of my children walking in truth, even as we receive commandment from the Father. Now I beseech thee, lady, not as though I write unto thee a new commandment, but that which you heard from the beginning, that we love one another. And this is love, that we should walk after his commandments. This is the commandment, that even as you've heard from the beginning, you should walk in it. Many deceivers are gone forth into the world, even they that confess not that Jesus Christ came in the flesh. This is the deceiver and the antichrist. Look to yourselves, that you love not the things which you have wrought, or that you lose not the things which you have wrought, but that you receive a full reward. Whosoever goeth onward and abideth not in the teaching of Christ hath not God. He that abideth in the teaching hath both the same, and the same hath both the Father and the Son." So it's a response to what God has done in sending Jesus. Now, there was a movement not too long ago that eliminated everything from the Bible except for the words that Jesus had spoken. As if those things that were said by God were unimportant, those things that were said by the Father. But Jesus and the Father are one. You can't love one and not love the other. They were both the ones who exhibited love toward us first. And we keep his word. It's Jesus' word. In John, the 14th chapter, at verse 23, Jesus answered, said to him, "If a man love me, he'll keep my word. My Father will love him. We'll come to him and make our abode with him." In 2 John, verse 3, passage we read already, "Grace, mercy, and peace shall be with us from God the Father and from Jesus Christ, the Son of the Father, in truth and in love." Now, kind of keep those two ideas together in your mind. And because we're freed people, because we're the kind of people that we are because of what God has done, we act out of love for other people. Always acting out of love for other people. It finds some real concrete expression. 1 John, the 3rd chapter. John says, "Whoso hath this world's goods and beholds his brother in need and shutteth up his compassion from him, how doth the love of God abide in him? My little children, let us not love in word, neither with the tongue, but in deed and truth." And what a great thing it is to be a part of a family where we interact with each other on the basis of love. And how sad it is when you see a family that is not their character. In James, the 2nd chapter, at verse 15, If a brother or sister be naked and in lack of daily food, and one of you say to them, go in peace, be ye warmed and filled, and you give them not the things that are needful to the body, what doth it profit? What good is there in that? So, everything about Christianity, everything about being a freed person, centers around this concept of love. God acting out of love toward us, us acting out of love toward God, and us acting out of love toward the people that are around us. Now let me just begin to give you the kinds of thoughts that we're going to continue with. You know, there are really three different motivations for people behaving appropriately. One motivation for behaving appropriately is because we're afraid of the person who is in charge. And we act out of fear. It's a response to the circumstances we find ourselves in that is sufficient for us to avoid being punished. But that's all it is. We do what we do in order to avoid punishment. In Galatians, the sixth chapter, there is the discussion of some people who act out of fear. It's not the way that we behave, but it's nevertheless the way that some people behave. Galatians 6 at verse 12. As many as desire to make a fair show in the flesh, they compel you to be circumcised. Why is that? Only that they may not be persecuted for the cross of Christ. Their only motivation is to avoid any kind of punisher. You know, animal experiments and even our experience with the relations between each other would indicate that when we can't escape punishment, we learn to be helpless. We just don't do anything. They did experiments with rats where they put them into a cage, and the floor of the cage on one side had a mild electric current running through it, and if they stood on it, they could feel that. So immediately they would jump over the little barrier to the other side of the cage where there wasn't the electric current. They were acting out of fear. They jumped over the barrier because they could get away from the punisher. But you know what happened when they electrified both sides of the barrier? First, the rat would feel the electric current on one side, and he'd immediately jump over the barrier to the other side, and he felt the electric current over there as well. And you know what his response was? He's laid down. He stopped behaving. Well, we're that way. Not that we don't have a more nuanced approach to our behavior than a rat does, but we're that way too. If there's no way to escape the punishment, we stop behaving. That's not a very good reason to do what we do. And you see it all the time. When government becomes chaotic in the way that it enforces the law, what do people do? They just stop. They don't do anything. Because it won't make any difference whether you do it this way or that way. You're going to be punished both ways. So why bother? Then there are people who act out of hope. And they do what they do in order to receive the reward. But they only do as much as they have to do in order to get the reward. Now, if you act out of hope, that will produce frenzied activity. I don't know if you've ever had a dog, but my dog loved to get a treat. And whenever I reached into the treat bag, my dog would immediately sit up, then she would lay down, then she would stand back up, offer a paw so she could shake. You got frenzied activity doing all kinds of things to try to get that treat. Well, people are the same way. When we act out of the expectation of reward, you get frenzied activity, but there's no commitment to it. Think about this for just a minute. Young man, he goes to work, gets his first job. He's a computer programmer. He's very good at what he does, and he's treated pretty well at the company where he is employed. And then along comes a startup, and somebody says, "I'll give you more reward." What's the man do? He jumps ship. He goes over there. But he has no commitment over there either. Because another startup comes along and says, "I really need your skills. I'll give you more than what they gave you over there." What's he do? He runs off. He jumps ship again. He's just acting out of an expectation of reward. There's no commitment. You see it in marriages. Man and woman get married, and it's all bliss. And then along comes a guy who looks better than the one that you got stuck with. So what do? Dump the old one. And goodness only knows, us guys get older and we lose our hair. We get wrinkled and we're not strong and vital as we used to be. And our wives run off. They get a new model. Guys do the same thing. It produces a frenzied activity, but it's not an activity that's in any way examples of commitment. Now, think about this for just a minute. The focus of those first two kinds of behavior is on me. Either I get to avoid punishment, or I get to enjoy a reward. And you know, Satan understands that concept. You remember the conversation he had with God before he tempted Job? God said, "Have you considered my servant Job? He is a faithful servant." And Satan said, "Oh, come on, skin for skin. The only reason he does what he does is because you give him so much. Take all that away and he'll forget about you." Well, Satan was wrong. Satan didn't understand, because Job, I think, was motivated by love. And love allows us to reach beyond ourselves, and our motivation for behavior is someone else. This is how free people behave. You know, it's such a strong motivator, understanding that we act because of our love for someone else. The Apostle Paul uses this motivation and our understanding of this motivation to describe our relationship with God. Now, understand that there are some limitations to what I'm going to read from 1 Corinthians 7, but it nevertheless is still something that's true. 1 Corinthians 7, beginning at verse 32, the apostle is giving some instruction to people that are single, and he says, "I wish you could stay single." That's a surprising statement. But he explains it this way. I would have you be free from cares. He that's unmarried is careful for the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. And that's all he cares about. Then look at what he says. He that's married is careful for the things of the world, how he may please his wife. In either case, the thing I want you to see is the motivation is outside of us. The motivation is pleasing someone else. We please God, we please our wives. Now, we'll be talking about these concepts throughout the month of March. And we'll begin to explore it more and more, but I'm so glad that I get to be a freed person, and I get to react to God. I get to react to the people that are around me out of love. And I'm glad that the people that are around me get to react the same way. Because the family that it creates, the spiritual well-being that it engenders, is beyond anything we can imagine. Thankfully, Jesus died. And we can put him on in baptism. We can become free people. We can be called to freedom. If you're here and you want to respond to that, if you think about the love that God has and that causes you to be motivated to respond, it's not just frenzied activity. You're not just going to do something, everything you can think of. That's kind of like the Jews. They multiplied feast days because it was just frenzied activity. What God said is, put Jesus on in baptism. He will wash away your sins. And we want to help you to do that. We're going to take a break now and center our thoughts around what Jesus did when he died for us.